For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Thank you, Richard Cotton. I have a very important message for you today, but it is a message in which strong language and strong images are going to be used, a message which may not be entirely appropriate for children. Please don't allow children to hear this particular program, but if you are a parent or prospective parent, I urge you to listen. The war against the survival of the European race is being waged on many fronts: economic, political, psychological, and sexual. Today, let us take a look at the sexual war against white people. The most overt sexual warfare takes the form of the promotion of racial mixing, which is inserted into virtually every form of entertainment offered to us in print or electronically. Jewish-owned MTV pumps out morally and racially defiling images and music to our young people 24 hours per day via satellite and cable, and thousands of money-hungry record stores and radio stations make sure that our youngsters can take the sweet poison with them wherever they go. But a more covert sexual warfare is taking place simultaneously. You need to learn to recognize it when you see it. Every creature on this planet, male or female, of whatever species, is born with the requisite and absolutely necessary instincts which lead it to do what it needs to do to ensure the survival of the next generation of that species. Any species which failed to do these necessary things would quickly pass from the earth. Creatures such as man, which reproduce sexually, require that males fertilize females, that the children be born, and that the children be nurtured and protected to an extent sufficient to result in an increase, or at least not a prolonged decrease, in the numbers of the species. For our species, sexual attraction between male and female serves the purpose of conception. Love between the couple bonds them together for the purpose of nurturing the children, and a special kind of love for the child makes the mother and father willing to sacrifice and even die if necessary so that the child may live. Although we may analyze and justify these behaviors on purely rational grounds, and well, we should, still, it is not upon the basis of the calculations of reason that we act in the interests of our children. It is not by the light of logic that we act so that there might be children of our kind after we as individuals die. No. These actions of ours are based upon a different kind of light, an inner light that tells us that the healthy white child in the womb is a sacred being to be protected at almost any cost, an inner voice that tells us that our mate and our offspring are to be provided with the necessities of life and protected from all danger. In short, an instinct that tells us and has told us since the dawn of man and even before to do the things that must be done so that our kind will be perpetuated through the ages. Revealed in this light, our sexual nature can be seen for what it really is, a unity of erotic love, family formation, and the birth and nurturing of our children. This unity is absolutely essential for the continued survival of our race. Breaking up this unity is one of the highest priorities of our race's enemies. That is the grand strategy of those who are prosecuting the sexual war against white people. A recent article in my local newspaper confirms that nurturing behavior is not only instinctive, but that the instincts have a definite genetic basis. So far, the proof only extends to mice, but it is known that the same gene exists in humans, and there is every reason to believe that all instincts, including our own, are determined by genetic structure. Quote, Dateline Boston, mom gene spurs mice to nurture little ones. Scientists have discovered a good mother gene, an inborn trigger that prompts female mice to care for their young. When this gene is missing, mice show no interest in their babies. Instead, they curl up in a corner and let the young ones die. The discovery is part of an effort by scientists to learn the genetic factors that control complex behaviors in animals. This particular gene, called FOSB, is a kind of regulatory switch that turns on other genes in response to outside cues. In this case, the gene is probably activated by the sight and smell of baby mice. Humans, too, have an FOSB gene. Whether it plays any role in prompting women to nurture their babies is unknown. Whether this would be relevant to other mammals, including people, remains to be considered in the future, said Dr. Michael E. Greenberg. You can't say anything more about that. The study was conducted by Jennifer R. Brown, a doctoral student in Greenberg's lab at Children's Hospital in Boston. It was published in the mid-July issue of the biweekly journal Cell. The scientists began by creating a knockout mouse, an animal that was missing the FOSB gene. The goal was to learn the gene's function by seeing how the animal acted without it. The mutant mice seemed normal until they gave birth. Ordinarily, a female mouse put in a cage with her babies will crouch over them and keep them warm within a minute. The mutant will go and investigate them, but fails to retrieve them and eventually goes off in a corner and ignores them, said Greenberg. Not fed or tended in any way, the babies die in a day or two. The gene also controls nurturing in male mice, although this drive is less pronounced in males. End of article. We do not yet know what parts of the DNA code control mating and child-rearing behavior among our people. And those who would destroy us do not yet have the ability to genetically alter us against our will. What they can do, however, and what they have been doing for decades, is taking advantage of the fact that, as arguably the most intelligent creatures on this planet, we can often make conscious decisions that run contrary to our instincts. Knowing that our conscious mind can override our instincts, they seek to fill that conscious mind with every possible kind of suicidal idea, from racial mixing to interracial adoption to the slaying of our healthy children while they sleep in their mother's womb. Or now, as Commissar Clinton has approved, they may be slain by having their brains removed as they emerge living from their mother's body. Now, I am not one of those who says that abortions must be absolutely prohibited. For example, as a thoroughgoing racial separatist, I do not presume to tell other races how they must govern their societies. They should be allowed to have whatever policies they choose on the other side of a secure border from us. I do not ask a woman to bear a child which is the result of an interracial rape. I do not ask a woman to bear a child which is certainly severely deformed. I do not ask a woman to bear a child the birth of which will almost certainly kill the mother. But we must recognize, if we are rational, that abortion is killing. And when we are speaking of killing our own offspring, if we are true to the instincts that ensure our survival and make us what we are, we must recognize that we are speaking of a particularly horrifying kind of killing. This Killing must be engaged in only under the most rare and terrible of circumstances. But today, white women are slaying their children in the womb in greater numbers than ever before. All legal considerations aside, there is something extremely sick about women wanting to kill their own healthy children in the womb. Something vile beyond imagining. There is something almost unbelievably depraved about women not only committing this obscene act for no other reason than convenience, but devoting a good portion of their lives to demanding it as a right. Any society that encourages such behavior is revealing a death wish that may well prove fatal. Thus, almost undefended, we begin to go under in the sexual war against white people. These statistics indicate that teenage girls are more likely to oppose abortion than adult women, a testament to the power of the healthy instincts of a girl approaching her childbearing years. But what word might we use to describe those who would turn that bright-eyed girl away from her natural ways and convince her that abortion of her healthy child is not only permissible, but in some cases laudable? The word teacher certainly does not apply. So goes the psychopolitics of the sexual war against white people. Since the 1973 decree by the Supreme Court legalizing abortion, at least 17,600,000 white children have been aborted. Had they been allowed to live, many of these children would be young parents by now. In a strange, but probably not entirely unintended irony, we have the brown flow from Mexico to replace these dead white children. Thus we lose battle after battle in the sexual war against white people. This year, at least 2 out of every 100 white women will slay her child in her womb. And the next year, another 2 out of every 100. And the next year, and the next, until at last the end of the road is reached, the culmination of the sexual war against white people. It isn't only by encouraging convenience abortion that our enemies seek to break the fundamental unity of love, family, and children, which is our natural sexual nature. They also encourage the idea that sexual intercourse is a consequence-free recreation, that any path to sexual pleasure and happiness is as valid as any other. Not only is homosexuality to be elevated to the status of an equal alternative to natural behavior, not only is the special feminine nature to be thrown out the window so that women can be degraded into an impossible and spiritless equality with men, but the more advanced thinkers on the campuses you subsidize are now telling our students that their inborn sexual identity may be discarded at will and another taken up in its place. If you find that unbelievable, consider the following article excerpt entitled Gender School by Shannon Bell about a being calling itself Kate Bornstein, a transgender transsexual. And again, I urge you not to allow children to hear the following material. I have edited out the very worst parts, but it still should not be heard by children. Begin article. Kate Bornstein, a transgender transsexual, by Shannon Bell. Part 1, Gender School. Sex is effing. Everything else is gender, Kate told us on the first day of Gender School, a 4-part, 16-hour, cross-gendered performance workshop, which was part of Buddies in Bad Times Theater Summer School Program. Kate is a Buddhist male-to-female transsexual performance artist and gender educator. Kate has been both male and female, and now is not one nor the other, but both and neither, as indicated in the title of her play, The Opposite Sex is Neither. The Cross-Gender Workshop, aimed at deconstructing gender, shedding gender, trying on a new gender, getting to zero point and then constructing a new gender. The only constraint on selecting a character was that it be some version of the opposite gender. I decided on the male object of my desire. I had done this before, but I had never stood in the shoes of the object of my desire, a butch chicken hawk. I had usually done boy. The crossover from woman to boy is pretty easy for a butch femme. And besides, when women do male, our male often comes out boy due to similarity in skin, size, weight, and energy. This time I was going to do the sort of male that brings me to my knees, the sardonic, gruff, older boy lover in the tradition of Jean Genet, Allen Ginsberg, and a couple of less famous but no less impressive boy lovers whom I have had the pleasure of sharing with boys. Part 2. The Opposite Sex is Neither, a one-woman performance piece written and performed by Kate Bornstein. Maggie, a goddess in training, has taken a wrong turn at the moon and ends up in late 20th century North America. Her current goddess training exercise is to allow her body to act as a conduit for seven people who are neither male nor female, neither here nor there, and neither dead nor alive. Maggie is to hold the gateways of higher awareness open for them as they each tell their own story of crossing gender. There is Ruby, the she-male drag queen performer, breasts, big hair, lots of makeup, and a penis, who is dying, her body ripped apart by AIDS lesions. There is Kat, who enters Maggie's body as she is waking up from sex change surgery, male to female. Kat, a compulsive support group joiner, concludes that gender's just something else to belong to. Part 3. Kate on Kate, an interview. Shannon asks, in the cross-gender performance workshop, you gave some very right-on definitions of gender. Kate. Gender is simply a way to classify people. Depending on the time and the culture, there are different criteria for the classification. In this culture, at this time, it is genital. Gender assignment happens at birth when the doctor inspects for a penis. The infant is assigned gender corresponding to the presence or absence of the penis. There are more and more people who are questioning gender, and not by dint of gender studies programs. There they mainly focus on what is the difference. They don't study gender. There is a field that is questioning gender, and that is ethnomethodology. Kessler and McKenna's An Ethnomethodological Approach, 1982, deserves tons of credit. Part of the dedication in the book I am writing is to them. Shannon. Gay men taught me to be the kind of woman I am now. And more recently, I learned how to be a goddess from Annie Sprinkle. I took her 10-hour slut and goddess transformation salon, and also just from being her friend. Shannon, you were a het guy until what age? Kate, yo, what do you want to know for? Until I was 35 or 36. Shannon, you changed genders and you became a lesbian. Did your taste in women change? Kate, no, but I was finally able to be with the women I really wanted to be with. I can't tell you how many women I approached when I was a straight man, only to find out they were lesbian. Shannon, what is your taste in women? Kate, I like a little bit of danger. I'm into S&M, and I am a switch. I appreciate someone who is into switching. Shannon, what does it mean to be a sexual outlaw? Kate, a sexual outlaw is a person who breaks sexual, or in this case, gender rules. The prime directive of gender in this culture is, if you are a woman, thou shalt not be a man, and if you are a man, thou shalt not be a woman, and in sex, thou shalt be heterosexual. There is a transgender liberation happening. Leslie Kleinberg writes about it in her book, Transgender Liberation. Within the transgender movement, there is a hierarchy. At the top of the heap are the post-operative transsexuals who pass. Next down are those who don't quite pass as well, but a re-post-operative, and then down and down and down, depending on where you are standing. If you are standing in the shoes of a she-male, that is the top of the heap. At the bottom of anyone's heap is the closet case who puts on his wife's panties when she is away on a business trip. End of article by Shannon Bell on Kate Bornstein. There it is, in all its sick glory. You may find it hard to believe, but I assure you that I have edited out the most offensive portions of that article. Lest you think that I exaggerate the importance of these two extremely sick individuals, may I remind you that Kate Bornstein, who used to be a nice Jewish boy and now is a mutilated I don't know what, has had its book published by Routledge Press and has had her work favorably reviewed by Brenda Dannett of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, who said, quote, "Thus, the photographs in Kate Bornstein's part autobiographical, part analytic book on her transformation from a formerly married biological male to a transsexual lesbian invite readers to compare her formerly male look with the now female lesbian one. Can that dashing man in a Marine officer's uniform really be the same person as the attractive woman with the long, luxuriant hair, plunging neckline, and earrings in the frontispiece photograph?" Close quote. The article I excerpted about Bornstein was originally published in a magazine calling itself C Theory, who tell us that they are published with the assistance of the Dean of Arts and Science and the Department of Political Science, Concordia University, Montreal, Canada. The author of the piece, Shannon Bell, is the author of a book published by the Indiana University Press, the author of a piece published by St. Martin's Press, which refused to publish David Irving, teaches political science at York University, and teaches the sociology of intimacy, whatever that is, at the University of Toronto. While any writer or thinker who dares to speak on behalf of the European race is excoriated and censored where he is not actually arrested and jailed, perverted corruptors of youth like these hold high positions in our debased educational and publishing establishments. So it goes in the ongoing sexual war against white people. So it goes until you and I put a stop to it. There is so much material on this sexual war against us that I will be continuing on this subject next time. For most of us to become part of the solution, we must make contact with other patriots who are already organizing and working to save our people. When you write to me, you are making such contact. When you write, you will gain access to a new world of information and knowledge that our people's enemies have hidden from you. This week we are again making our special discount offer on the finest patriotic educational material available anywhere. Our radio offer number 2. Radio offer number 2 includes our best-selling book of the best articles published in our patriotic newspaper over a 12-year period. This is a huge book of 217 newspaper-sized pages, finely written and illustrated, a literal encyclopedia of truth. Radio offer number 2 also includes 2 of the greatest patriotic speeches ever committed to audio tape, Dr. William Pierce's incomparable our cause, and Dr. Revelo Oliver's eye-opening What We Owe Our Parasites. These speeches, totaling well over 2 hours in total length, will leave you spellbound with their crystal-clear logic, their deep insights into our national plight, and their amazing revelations of heretofore hidden truths. Radio offer number 2 also includes the latest issue of our patriotic magazine, National Vanguard. You get all of these items, our book of our best articles, the 2 cassette tapes of the finest patriotic speeches in our catalog, and the latest issue of our magazine as our radio offer number 2. In addition, we will send you a free sample copy of Free Speech, our monthly newsletter for supporters of this radio program. Normally, we would request a donation of $57 for all these items. But this week, we are offering them together to any listener who contributes $45 or more to keep this program on the air. Send as much as you believe our efforts are worth, a minimum of $45, to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. And remember to ask for radio offer number 2. Until next week, keep on thinking free.
You've been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute 2 international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.